When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast. Probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson himself. Pete, how are you doing today?
I'm good, man. It's a Sunday, so obviously it's the Lord's Day. I've been to church all morning, been learning my parables and my religious stories, and I'm just ready to get going. Ready to get going. I do hope you've had a cracking Sunday yourselves. I've had a roast dinner, and yeah, it's been a classic Sunday. Enjoyable.
A classic Sunday. And you haven't dropped any more AirPods in avocados this week.
That's how I started last week's show. Very much dropping my expensive headphones into avocado and ruining both things almost equally. I've been reading about Shinzo Abe. Apparently, you name checked the writer Jake Adelstein last week on the show, and he's kind of been. People argue that he might be a bit of a fantasist when it comes to getting down his stories and stuff, and he certainly has a real problem with people criticizing him online. But he come at us, bro. Joking. But he has he wrote quite an interesting piece about what Shinzo Abe is going to do next. And apparently, like over the past few years, he's made it very clear that he's very into like mobster movies, like Yakuza films. So that's maybe something he might be getting into, the old Oyabun kind of Yakuza style films from back in the day. Because I think his granddad was quite involved in having pretty strong links with Yakuza. And obviously, Shinzo Abe doesn't. Mm. But he does like those proper naughty gangster films from back in the day. So that's maybe something he'll be moving into.
That's amazing. I mean, I do know that Shinzo Abe is one of his relatives, who I think is his granddad perhaps or father, I can't remember, was the Prime Minister of Japan. And he had a right-hand man, a fixer, who was affiliated with the Yakuza. So yeah, you're probably absolutely right there. But I hadn't read that article. I'll have to check that out. Sounds pretty interesting. Shinzo Abe, of course, retiring after being the longest serving Japanese Prime Minister, having quite a hell of a ride, and bowing out due to some nasty sort of disease. And we're still waiting on who is going to be his successor. We're still waiting to find out. So that'll be interesting to find out in the coming weeks. Could change things. Could change the game.
Another thing that somebody got in touch with on the emails, and I have to play this. Siron Sloth. Hi there, Chris and Pete. I hope you're having the best of days. I'm going to start the show with a little email, if that's all right with you, Chris, because we've just heard the title music. I was wondering, have you ever noticed the intro to the podcast vaguely resembles the song Cotton Eye Joe? Chris, you'd be familiar with the song Cotton Eye Joe, wouldn't you?
I hate it.
In the day.
I hate it.
Can you remember what their follow-up single was? It was called Poppin' an Oak, and it was the exact same tune. Poppin' an Oak, but it was just, you know, it's just still the same theme as Cotton Eye Joe. I'm not sure it made its way over the pond, but it was excruciatingly Europoppy and crap. Siron has smashed out his alto trombone of him recording himself playing the two theme tunes. The first you'll hear is the Abroad Japan podcast theme.
It is time for the Abroad Japan podcast.
Beautifully done. Beautifully
very
done,
good,
wasn't
yeah.
it, Chris? Yeah.
Superb.
Now it's Cotton Eye. Where did you come from? Where did you go? Where did you come from, Cotton Eye Joe? I mean, I don't necessarily... It's the first three notes, isn't it, really?
I'm glad I haven't made that connection before. I don't... Yeah. You're right, it's the first three notes. I hate Cotton Eye Joe, yeah. So knowing that could ruin the Abroad in Japan podcast theme tune. I remember a few months ago, I think we discussed potentially changing the Abroad in Japan podcast theme tune, mixing it up a bit, maybe having something a bit more Japanese sounding. But I think
Cotton
I mentioned
Cotton
it on Twitter. And we're not using Cotton Eye Joe. I'd rather have Natsuki singing something or playing guitar than Cotton Eye Joe. That's quite good, to be honest. But too many listeners were angry and were like, no, you can't change the song. It's the best bit. So we've kept it and we'll keep it forever. We'll never change it. Unless Cotton Eye Joe people sue the songwriters of the theme tune for the Abroad in Japan podcast.
I had a couple of tweets recently. It may have been Scandinavia because we do have a lot of Scandinavian listeners, but somebody was watching television in Sweden, I want to say, or maybe Norway, and they heard the classy the Abroad in Japan, Journey Across Japan theme that we loved so much. It was being used in like a little documentary. So that is the problem with not being able to have the finances to compose original music, because the problem is that there's two scores of that. Obviously, you have mates who are in bands who can produce music, and in my opinion, I'm not saying you do, but a lot of people take advantage of their friends who are musicians, and they don't pay the going rate for what they are creating. If you go with the library option, it's not like you're buying an exclusive contract for that music, so anyone can use it. So that this documentary in Sweden was using the Abroad in Japan Journey Across Japan music. And I was like, oh, you could have like a proper, like, identifiable, iconic piece of music, but because you don't own the rights to it, anyone can use it. It's really difficult, isn't it?
It's
real and hard.
It certainly happened with the Journey Across Japan theme tune more than others because, of course,
it's a banger.
I had it on like 50 videos or something ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
It's been on so many videos. So that's a shame. But luckily, hopefully, the 28 episodes it appeared in on my channel supersede everything else. And that's the first thing people think about with any luck.
Yes, exactly. But just be first. Just be first.
Be first. Be first. while we're on the subject of Journey Across Japan, I'm going to do it again. There's a Journey Across Japan 2 coming out, Pete. There's another one.
Oh, Chris, why are you doing this to yourself?
Because this time, Pete, there's not going to be a bicycle. It's going to be inside a car.
Two bicycles. Oh, that makes it easier, doesn't it? That does make it easier. Yeah, a lot easier. I mean, if I'd have known, I wouldn't have come on the bike one. And we'd just sat in your car, to be quite frank.
And get me some more speeding tickets like last time. Brilliant.
Look, technically, pretty soon we're going to be in a situation where the Japanese are letting businessmen in for like business meetings. So, I mean, technically, me coming to join you on your little car, I think that's technically a business meeting.
That's not a business meeting. I'm getting you deported.
That's a business meeting.
I'm going to make a video.
Sponsor my visa, you shit.
Going to make a video on the Abroad Japan channel exposing you and exposing the rigged system where dodgy, shady individuals come from London to spread disease and sow mayhem. But no, I'm going to do like a spin-off of Journey Across Japan. I feel like I want to do something traveling around and about, right? Do another kind of adventure because this year has been a bit rubbish, hasn't it? And the Journey Across Japan name is so well... It's just so well known these days. And quite a few folks still message me saying, you know, I've been watching it indoors because I haven't had much else to do. And it's kind of the closest thing I've had to traveling around Japan this year. So I wanted to keep Journey Across Japan as the title. This one's going to be called Journey Across Japan Escape to Fuji because it's a 6-day road trip around central Japan, around the Japanese Alps, ultimately culminating in arriving at Mount Fuji. And hopefully this time I'll see the bloody mountain because nobody ever does, including me. My last attempt was a miserable failure, given that it's always in the clouds. But this time, going to go and find it once and for all. I'm not leaving until I've seen it and filmed it. But joining me on this trip is Joey the Anime Man, who you may recall from Journey Across Japan's earlier episodes. He was the first guest and In his segment, we drove through, we cycled through Niigata, and there wasn't a whole lot there. We were really desperate. So we had to do lots of challenges that made it more interesting. And some of the best videos on Journey Across Japan are with Joey on that section. We went to like a haunted tunnel. We pimped out our bicycles. We made a commercial in an abandoned train. And so we turned this really dull segment into something rather fun and memorable, I think. And so we're going to try and recapture some of that success from those glorious few episodes. But yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And I'm hoping to kind of make this an ongoing series. So for this season, it'll be Joey and we'll be going around the Alps and central Japan. Maybe the next season we'll go somewhere like Hokkaido, season after that Okinawa, season after that Kyushu, kind of thing. So there'll be like a theme around it each and every time. So this one, we're going to Mount Fuji, and hopefully later on down the line, Pete, it'll be you joining us on Journey Across Japan for another season. But where would you like to go?
We just don't know where that's going to happen. I'd like to go in the what's that little island in the middle the middle of that's kind of like hugged by the top of Japan. It's like it gives the little island a little hug.
Hokkaido. Wait, hug?
No, I mean like let's have a look. Japan. Oh, something in Japan. The
Tsushima.
Big, no.
Honshu, Shikoku, Kyushu.
Hang on, Shikoku. Is it Shikoku? I think it might be Shikoku.
The little island.
Yeah, Shikoku.
The
island. Yeah. Tokushima, Ehime, Kochi. That those kind of. I've never been in any of those places. Effectively, the closest I've ever been is, I've not really sort of been there at all. In fact,
well, it's quite great
hard
stuff
to
in Shikoku.
Get there.
There's a pilgrimage with like dozens of shrines you're supposed to do as well. But Shikoku is supposed to be really amazing. I've been there a few times, and one of my favourite towns, my favourite city in Japan's there, Matsuyama. It's a beautiful place with a nice castle in the heart of the city. But that could be fun. Definitely, I'll be up for that. Mm. Just not in the summer, because it's rubbish in the summer. Lots of incredibly hot, lots of insects, lots of spiders, snakes, and hornets, so I'll avoid it in summer. Other than that, we'd love to do it. But we kick off filming in early October, and hopefully it'll be out towards the end of October. So I need a few weeks to edit it all. But I'm not going to talk about where we're going. We've got a very carefully researched and planned, meticulous itinerary. That's a bit open-ended, to be fair, a bit like Journey Across
Japan. Anpan Man. Are you using Anpan Man again?
We might do,
like
we might have challenges. Yeah, we might have some challenges where like listeners or viewers can kind of send in things they'd like to see us do. We're still thinking about that bit. But hopefully we can just kind of just have a bit of fun, have an adventure, and kind of bring some entertainment to folks that wanted to come to Japan this year but couldn't. And that's what it's all about, really,
beautiful,
at the end of the day, isn't it? Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that. Keep an eye out. And I'll be giving you more updates on Journey Across Japan, Escape to Fuji, in the coming weeks. And now we turn our attention to the story of the week. This week we've got a story from Tyler, and it's the ultimate weekend trip, apparently. So hello, Chris and Pete. Yeah. Or rather, hello, Chris, and the Honourable Pete Donaldson. The Honourable Pete Donaldson.
I like it.
There's nothing,
I like it.
Nothing honourable about Pete Donaldson. I hope you're doing well and staying safe. I have quite a harrowing story about my trip to Japan that perhaps could be a learning experience for future travellers. In November 2018, I had the ingenious idea to take a weekend excursion to Japan. No, I do not live somewhere nearby like Korea or Shanghai, but rather all the way in the United States. That is mental. I left on a Thursday morning, flew for 14 hours to Tokyo, and stayed for just 72 hours before returning home the following Monday. Things went downhill.
Oh, wow. I've thought about doing this before, when we could go. I've thought about going, right, I could do a Thursday to like a Monday, just have a weekend. That would be mad, wouldn't it? Get an Air China flight, changing in Beijing to make it nice and cheap, and just railing right through. What an adventure that would be. Just a cheeky weekend in Tokyo.
I thought I was cool because I did this exact same thing when I was a university student. I went to Rome for the weekend, but this just makes that rubbish now. The story continues. Things went downhill, though, when I decided to take a day trip from Tokyo to Hiroshima with the goal of visiting the famous Okunoshima, also known as Rabbit Island. I departed from Akihabara at 5:30 a.m. and boarded the very first Shinkansen of the day. Because of time constraints, I would have had to take a different ferry to and from the island. First, I would sail onto the island from Mihara Station, where the Shinkansen stops. But for my return journey, the ferry would take me to Tadanomi, where I'd take a local train back to Mihara. Tragedy struck when I was returning from Rabbit Island. I walked into Tadanomi Station, and it was empty, save only for a dark abandoned train car. As it turns out, the entire train line was shut down because of a typhoon earlier in the year. I would later learn there was a replacement bus service, but it had also stopped running by the time I got there. Not knowing what to do, I ran to the nearest police box and asked a police officer if they knew of any taxi services. The officer kindly called me a taxi, but it was too late. I had missed the final train back to Tokyo. With my phone only 5%, I hastily changed my Shinkansen ticket and booked an emergency hotel in Nagoya, which was as far as I could go. I spent the night there before returning to Tokyo the following morning. My question for you, Chris and Pete, is have you ever gotten stuck somewhere in Japan after the last train has come and gone? What did you do to get home, and how did you manage to remain calm, despite the sense of impending doom being stuck in a foreign country? Warm regards, Tyler. I don't feel those questions are relevant, Tyler. It's a very blasé manner. I went to Japan for the weekend. I went to Rabbit Island. 10,000 miles to see some rabbits, and then I went home. No, you can't escape the fact that is ridiculous.
No, obviously you've squeezed a lot in 72 hours. Fantastic, you've done well. I'm excited by what you've done, Tyler. But I can't help but think that going all the way to fucking Rabbit Island in that weekend is insane behavior, because it's like, it's on the train, but it's not really on the train. You get off the Shinkansen. We got a taxi, and it was a good 60 quid taxi to get to the actual ferry terminal. So it's very off the beaten track in the grand scheme of a very simple trip to Japan, I think it's fair to say.
At least just stay in one place. Just go to Osaka for like a weekend or Tokyo. But like that basically means the entire trip was just sitting on a train or a plane or a boat without doing a whole lot. Still, fair play though.
Incredible.
Some of my fondest memories of trips where I've done that, like just gone for a weekend somewhere like Rome, or I remember I went to Zurich in Switzerland for one day once. One very long day when I was at university. I didn't really enjoy university a lot because I just felt manacled to studies when I wanted to escape and travel and have fun. So I'd often just do these like little weekend trips away to Paris or Rome or Zurich. And so I get the thrill. I understand like why it's fun to have a weekend trip away like that. I do get it. But at the same time, it's a bit ridiculous, but I'd like to hear more.
It's exciting though, isn't it? It's exciting. I think the furthest I've done, because I used to work on a Sunday afternoon, so I used to fly out on a. I've done this quite a lot, but not as far as obviously Japan. I've flown as far as like 5 hours. Friday morning fly out, get back. Friday morning fly out, and then get back Sunday morning for my radio show at 2 p.m. in the afternoon. That's what p.m. means, I guess. But yeah, I flew to like Turkey and a couple of other places. But it's just stressful getting up at like 4 o'clock in the morning to get to the plane for five, and you're just spending a lot of money. And it's a lot of fun when you get there and you're very excited. Less fun at 5 o'clock in the morning when you got to get back for a radio show and you're worried about missing it. I will say though, planes are way more regular and way more reliable than getting the Grand Central from the northeast or the Virgin trains from the northwest. So actually coming back from Manchester is more risky, and I've missed more of a show than I have when I've flown back from like places like Turkey or Greece. Crazy.
And I don't think planes are going to be much more frequent now either. So I don't know how easy this is going to be to do, sadly. But I'd like to hear more from Tyler. Like, Tyler, if you're listening, why did you do this? You've just said it was an ingenious idea, but I want more. I want to know more. Why? What would lead you to do this? Let us know, because it's a fantastic story. We've got some interesting news this week about sushi. Do you like sushi, Pete? Are you a sushi fan?
I am a sushi fan. I like sashimi. Yeah. There's not a bit of sushi I've ever eaten that I have not enjoyed. Occasionally, you go to places where they are very, very, I'm going to say, out there when it comes to what animals they use. And on a hangover, that's never good, to be quite frank. But yeah, generally, I'll eat anything when it comes to sushi, because you can always just hide the taste of stuff with a lot of wasabi.
That's very true. I mean, Conveyor Belt Sushi is beloved by all. Even I've got back into it recently. I often criticize it because it's often not as good as the real thing, like going to a decent sushi restaurant. But if I found there are some good chains like Seijiro around where you can get good Conveyor Belt Sushi. But one Conveyor Belt Sushi restaurant known as Kappa Sushi, which is one of Japan's biggest Kaiten conveyor belt sushi chains, has started a home conveyor belt service in Tokyo, Kanagawa, Saitama, and Chiba called Shucho Kaiten Sushi Service, literally business trip rotating sushi service. And it means that for about $754, you can hire two chefs to come to your house or office or anywhere, bring a conveyor belt, which is about 16 feet long, and they will create sushi for you, prepare sushi, put it on the conveyor belt, and you can have the whole conveyor belt sushi experience from the comfort of your own home or office space. What do you reckon, Pete? Is that a good idea?
I mean, could they not just extend the conveyor belt so that it's like gets to your house, like, you know, like just extending a train track, just bringing it through. Like we spoke before on my football podcast about the St. Pauli hot dog train, which was a little train in the posh seats at St. Pauli, the football club in Germany. To deliver hot dogs, they'd have a little choo-choo train that would go around. So just extend the conveyor belt to go around the person's house. You don't need to bring your own conveyor belt and bring all that sushi with you. It just seems incredibly expensive and wasteful.
I suppose, I mean, if you do the maths, like the standard plan is 80,000 yen, $754, and that is enough sushi to feed 10 people, 15 pieces each with 15 different types of toppings, right? I mean, that seems pretty reasonable. So $754 divided by 10, $75 a head. I mean, that's probably twice what you would normally pay, right? That is typically you probably pay like $20 to $30 for a trip to a Kaiten sushi restaurant. So it's a little bit more money. But I guess if you want to be health conscious, if you want to avoid the threat of COVID-19, which is the main reason they've done this, then it could work in that respect. I mean, I don't think I could eat 15 pieces. I typically can't manage like 10 pieces at a sushi restaurant. I'm pretty... Something about sushi fills me up really easily and effortlessly. I just get stuffed really quickly.
It's the rice, isn't it?
It's the rice. But for a bit more money, if you want to go the extra mile, you can even get a customized plan that includes a tuna dismantling show where the chefs carve up a whole tuna in front of the crowd, which I've seen it done a few times. It's quite fun, to be fair. And you get a little seashell that you use to scoop out the tuna and eat it really fresh. So that's a pretty cool idea. It's pretty cool. What I will say is Kappa Sushi, I used to like it, but that's one of the conveyor belt sushi restaurants I typically try to avoid these days. I just find it's not that great, but I don't know. Who knows? Could be quite a fun thing to do. If there wasn't any COVID, we were looking at doing a meetup event this year with Natsuki and I, maybe Ryotaro, in Tokyo. And this would have been a cool thing to do, right? Maybe get it for like everyone. So everyone coming could have had like a Kaiten Sushi at a venue or something. So if they still have it next year, could do it for sure. I might consider it. It could be quite fun having your own conveyor belt. What do you reckon?
It just seems very expensive for what you're getting. Just go to a sushi shop, for crying out loud. Oh, man.
Too elaborate. Too elaborate.
Too much
Where's your
faff.
Sense of fun?
Too much faff. A tuna it's dismantling fun. Show. Too much faff. Come on.
Food is three times better, Pete, when it's served on a conveyor belt and it goes around
it
and
is.
Around.
It is.
And around.
I like the danger.
I think conveyor belt sushi restaurants have been hit harder than most, because obviously the idea of food just going round in circles around lots of people is a bit risky. So they've started covering them more. They've started putting more coverings over the sushi to keep them safe. But I think there's still that image, isn't it, of it being a bit dirty. I don't know. But cool idea. So it's been so interesting seeing how businesses have adapted to the whole situation, right, over the last few months. And certainly a lot of restaurants have started doing takeaways. Even ramen shops, right? You wouldn't think takeaway ramen could be a thing. But what a lot of ramen shops do is they separate all the ingredients. So they'll have like the soup in a bowl, and then they'll have like the pork and the chashu and the noodles in another bag. And you sort of get it to you kind of collect it, take it back to your house or office work space, and you kind of assemble the ramen yourself, right? You pour the soup in, you put the noodles in. So interesting seeing how it's adapted. Could be the future. Don't know. But I must say, certainly where I am up in North Japan, things have kind of gone back to normal a lot more recently. It seems like restaurants are going back to normal. So that's a bit encouraging. And cases are down. So bonus.
Good.
Not so sure about the UK, though. Doesn't seem to be.
That's very much not the case. Our curve is very much going up.
Oh, dear.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
Hi, I'm Nicole Goodman.
And I'm Lauren Mishcon.
In 2020, self-care can seem like yet another overwhelming job for women.
Every week, we test out a new kind of self-care so you don't have to.
Firstly, can we just clarify how we pronounce it?
Kombucha?
Kombucha.
Yeah.
Kombucha.
Kombucha. Self-care club. Wellness road tested.
So that was the first day. You know, it was just the not slipping into the complete default mode of what I normally do, which is have a go at my husband for what he hasn't done and, you know, all of that stuff. I kind of stopped.
Okay, so it was more the absence of meanness rather than the projection of kindness at this initial point.
Yes.
Listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
This week, we are testing out menstrual cups. How are you feeling?
Dreading it. I know that you love to give a practice that's all about down below. I'm not interested. I've never even really thought about it since before I met you.
Never thought about your vagina until you met me.
It doesn't get a lot of air time. No, it doesn't.
The Self-Care Club is a Stakhanov production.
And with that, we turn our attention to the fax machine. What do we got this week in the fax machine, Mr. Donaldson?
Sarah from Michigan and Logan as well. Welcome to the show, Sarah and Logan from Michigan. Hi, Chris and Pete. I love the podcast. Listen to it almost exclusively while taking my dogs for a walk. In May 2019, my boyfriend and I, Logan, took a 2.5 week trip to Japan to visit his friend who he was roommates with in college. He was an exchange student from Osaka. You said before that Japanese people tend to keep themselves to themselves and mind their own business, but that wasn't true in our case. Logan has a red hair, and it seemed everyone we came across in Japan was obsessed with him. That does happen a lot, doesn't it, Chris? People, they like the fiery redheads in Japan.
Apparently so. I didn't know that until
apparently
now,
so.
But yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've heard it a few times from people. When we were in Osaka, we went to lunch with his college friend and his mum and his sister. The friend's sister was absolutely obsessed with my boyfriend, saying she loved his hair at least twice, stared at him throughout lunch, said something about how he's good looking, and more or less asked about his entire life story about living in a small town, despite her not understanding much English. Also in Osaka, a random photographer on the seas of Dotonbori asked and took candid photos of my boyfriend eating some takoyaki. In Hiroshima, two young boys are in inside a building while walking by outside. They banged on the windows to get our attention and waved furiously at us. My boyfriend waved back and they freaked out that he responded. Then they tried to get him to dab and he did that to amuse the kids and they absolutely lost it. Also in the Hiroshima Peace Museum, a group of kids formed a line in front of my boyfriend and asked him to mark on their school paper map where he's from. There was probably 10 kids waiting in line for him to mark their paper, but not a single kid asked me to. The last example I'll give you was on our last day in Japan. I went to go return my key to the woman at the desk in our hostel and she asked if I was at another one of their locations in Asakusa. I said yes and she explained she recognised me because she remembered my boyfriend who was still up in the room and not currently with me at the time with the red hair. Is this normal for Japanese people to be obsessed with people and their red hair, or is this just a really long list of coincidences? Sarah from Michigan and Logan with the red hair. Logan with the good hair.
I think it's just because Logan in the photo is just a very dashing, handsome, smiling,
he is very
happy
dashing
young fellow. Yeah.
I'd take a slice of Logan, quite frankly.
I don't know. I mean, I'd never heard of this before. Clearly, it's worked, having red hair. That's encouraging. I mean, well done, Logan. That sounds like the best trip ever. Who knew your hair could have such a positive impact on your time in Japan? A thrill that I'll never get to experience myself.
I know, right?
It's so surreal that all this happened to him. But I think it's because he just looks happy. I mean, it's a smile.
Yeah, exactly. Damn
it's
right.
A smile.
Damn straight.
Well done, Logan. If Prince Harry came to Japan, he'd be a great hit, wouldn't he? Judging by that story.
I guess. He's also a prince as well, so I mean, like that would help.
That would help.
Yeah, that'll help. That'll help.
Hi, Chris and Pete. We've got one from Dan. It says, hi, Chris and Pete. My question to you isn't specific to Japan. I'm more curious about how you transitioned to living alone. I'm planning on moving out my parents' house in the next few months. While it's an exciting prospect, it's also a little scary. How was your initial experience? You no longer have anyone else in the house to do laundry, cook, shop, clean. And as an extra, not only did you not have to move out on your own, you also moved to a completely new country. So what's it like? It's not like you can ask someone for assistance. Do you think it made it really hard? I've been a fan for a few years now. Love both your work. Thank you, Dan. I mean, I love living alone, Dan. It was bloody brilliant. It's true. I've always been rubbish at things like laundry, cooking, shopping, cleaning. I can't do any of those things. But I love living alone. It was magic. I remember up until the age of 22, I'd either lived with my parents or with friends at university. And
yeah.
I remember just the thrill of I remember falling asleep on my sofa in my room once in my little apartment. And waking up an hour later of my own accord because there was no one there to wake me up. There was no parents shouting at dinner time. There was no roommates trying to whisk me off to do drinking games and do shots. It was just me alone in a room, waking up on my own, alone in a room. It was a bit weird, but I loved it. I loved having my own private space. And I might not be able to cook, but I could certainly walk to the nearby ramen shop, McDonald's. And that's basically how I lived for 3 years.
It's all you need. It's all you need. Come on.
Absolutely. What about you, Pete?
Enjoyable.
Living alone for the first time.
Yeah, I mean, like it was, I'm trying to think when it first was in my 20s. But again, I was always in like a house share, I guess, until I was about 25, I want to say. And then I had a house by myself. Yeah, I mean, just I lived for quite a while in my 30s alone, and that was quite easy, I guess. You sort of make your own hours, but I mean, after a while, it does get very boring. No one to talk to.
Can do.
Especially in the lockdown as well.
Well, yeah, God, it must have been horrible for people in the lockdown. But I mean, in winter, it got quite tough because in Yamagata, where I used to live, like, the winter was horrendous. It was just snow and you just couldn't go out for like 4 months or something. And what I will say to anyone living alone, if you feel a bit down, just put on like your favorite sitcom. I used to put on my favorite sitcoms on repeat in the background and that would just cheer you up, really. It's the miracle of TV and the internet. Just put on your favorite sitcom and you'll feel very happy. Or Abroad in Japan.
Or YouTuber.
Yeah, put on Abroad in Japan. Put on the podcast. Job done. We've got one from Matthias in Norway. Did I pronounce that right, Pete? Matthias?
I think so, yeah.
Matthias.
That sounds about right. Matthias? Yeah, it looks like Matthias to me. Hello, Chris and Pete. Me and my best friend are planning a trip to Japan. In terms of food, I have no problems trying something new and exciting. However, my friend is an absolute baby when it comes to food. Do you have any suggestions for what kind of places we can visit and eat without going to something like a McDonald's? Keep the good work, my friend Matthias in Norway. I've had a lot of that kind of caper, to be honest. Friends who I've been with who aren't really that into trying new things. So it's kind of it annoys me. So I just eat try the food. Come on, get involved. Well,
just get yourself down Moss Burger. It's like
just go down Moss Burger.
Moss Burger, yeah. Authentic Japanese burgers, job done.
And also when you're on holiday, you find that like you're trying to have a nice, you're having a nice time. And if you're not like a culinary maniac, and I'm not, I couldn't give a toss about, you know, getting obsessed about food and stuff. It's nice to try new things every now and again. But I mean, half the time it's just like, you just walk around. It's like, oh, is this restaurant got enough people? Is there got a table there? Is the restaurant, what do they serve? And it's really hard to kind of satisfy the cravings of like five or six different people with very different tastes. So I don't mind going to a McDonald's. I don't think it is a massive problem at all. Quite frankly, get yourself in a McDonald's. Lovely old job.
Can't go wrong with it, but I can't recommend going to McDonald's regularly on your trip. That would be a bit sad, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would be. Well, at least they have the shrimp burger there.
Yeah, overrated. I remember the shrimp burger. I remember when I lived in Yamagata, there was a guy who was another teacher, fellow teacher, and he exclusively ate only Pizza Hut, and that was it. Mm. Just ate Pizza Hut and McDonald's for like the 2 years that he lived there. Just wouldn't eat sushi or like anything else. No kind of Japanese cuisine. Yeah. You wouldn't touch it. Even the ramen, because it had some sort of fish broth flavoring in it. You just wouldn't touch it. So, yeah, it's crazy how fussy people can be sometimes. And it's a shame, right? To come to Japan and miss out on everything would be a crime. Absolutely. What I would say, Matthias, is Torikizoku is a good one. It's a yakitori chain. And even, you know, everyone can eat that. Yakitori, chicken on a skewer, beef, pork, beautifully done. Torikizoku. It's a great place. Love it. We've got one from Emil from the Netherlands. It says, hi, Chris and Pete. With over a year having passed between now and my trip to Japan last summer, I'd like to reminisce with you about my experience I had on a late night in Osaka. I packed my bags that day after 8 days in the city, and I had to wait until midnight to board my bus towards Hiroshima. To pass the time, I decided to check out the musicians around Osaka Station and ended up watching an idol girl perform in front of a small group of 5 to 10 very enthusiastic fans. With the way they were chanting and dancing along, you'd expect her to be some kind of incredibly famous group, but she was in fact promoting a small idol group with less than 500 subscribers on YouTube. The music was quite fun and had a nice beat to it, so I ended up buying a CD from her named Omotenashi Japan, which means like welcoming, hospitable Japan. The idol, being quite surprised about a foreigner buying a CD, offered to take a picture with me before running off towards their fans and pointing over at me. The fans in turn walked over to me, and each of them handed me a CD of the idol group, thanking me and insisting on me taking the CDs. What would be a forgettable evening, preparing for an uncomfortable bus ride, turned into a great showcase of Japanese generosity that still puts a smile on my face each time I think about it. Emil from the Netherlands. And Emil has sent us a photo of him clutching the album, Omotenashi Japan, with the idol girl dressed in some sort of Hawaiian-looking dress, giving the peace sign, and she looks very happy that someone has bought the CD. Have you ever seen this, though, Pete? Have you seen these kind of idol singers? Often someone who wants to be a singer will just go to the side of a road, put out like a little boombox with a microphone and just bash out a song. And they'll like invite their friends from Facebook, and they'll come around in a semicircle and dance around. And it often looks a bit awkward, to be honest. I often find it a little bit depressing because the crowds that come to see them are playing tiny.
No one's playing like any instruments or anything. They're just sort of dancing around to some music. It's a bit weird, isn't it?
It's a bit weird. At the same time, it wouldn't be Japan without it. I often see them around Ueno Station. Like, I always find just out the front of Ueno Station near Akihabara, there's always someone singing and dancing to a little crowd. The most awkward times, and it's often fairly common, it's just like one 50-year-old man dancing up and down, like jumping up and down, filming it on his phone. This like idol girl dancing and singing. It's just, I can't wrap my head around it.
Absolute wrong-uns, yeah.
One part of the culture I'll never truly grasp, but I think Emil made her day, judging by the photo and judging by the fact he was probably the only one to buy the CD, apart from the 5 fans that were there. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming in to abroadjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back on Wednesday to do it all over again. Oof. For now, guys, no matter where you might be, out there in the big wide world. Have yourself a great few days, and we'll see you then to do it all over again in the Abroad Japan podcast. Take care.
That's our art.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.